Welcome to The Art Scene, presented each week by UALR's College of Arts, Humanities and Social Sciences and UALR Public Radio. The 2012 Performing Arts season is only just ending, but the new season beckons. And my guest today is Philip Mann, Arkansas Symphony's music director and conductor, who joins me, as he has done since taking over the position, to give us some of the background of what Arkansas audiences will be hearing and seeing in this, the last season in Robinson Auditorium, as we now know it.
Well, I think one of the things with this season that we were really going for was a sense of event, a sense that something really powerful and amazing is happening. And I think that's appropriate, and that this is our last season in the Robinson Music Center. And we have a couple things playing out here. One, it's an all-Russian program, something we haven't done here in a while. And it's something that also coincides with the 100th anniversary of Stravinsky's Rite of Spring, which happens in the summer of 2013. So it's a piece that you demarcate major occasions in the history of an orchestra. It's always an event, just putting that on the program. You open the season with a certain flair and a certain feeling, and while Stravinsky offers that in some respects, I think you have to be very careful in balancing what the solo on that program might be, something that offers the kind of festive and fun kind of atmosphere that people will come to expect from a season opener. And the Tchaikovsky First Piano Concerto is one of the great pieces in the repertoire that fulfills that and offers great virtuosity and incredible lyricism, the whole gamut, really.
And probably the best known for American audiences because of its connection with Kleiber.
Absolutely. It's become ubiquitous for those of us that grew up with orchestras as one of those great heroic piano concerti that you go just to see how it turns out. And we have a young hero really playing this piece. Martina Filjic is being compared right now to a young Martha Argerich. And I keep my ear to the railroad tracks and listening to what other people are saying at other cities and, you know, having colleagues conducting in different orchestras around the world. And she's a name that has been consistently popping up as the people say, oh, a rising star, and that's such a cliche now, but when so many people are talking about it, you know something really special is happening. And I was really, really excited that she was able to fit us into an American tour that she's doing at the same time. And I think we'll excite our audiences, both with her pyrotechnic abilities on the piano, just a solid, incredible powerhouse of a player, but a very deeply felt musicality that translates far beyond just around the instrument. I mean, I think when you listen to great musicians, you know, they literally seem to be giants. While they may be diminutive in stature, they seem to cast a wide shadow. And she's one of these people that absolutely does that in an impressive young age.
The thing about living in America and beginning to realize just how many of the world's races have settled here, it's impossible to tell where the soloists are coming from. What is her background?
I mean, I'm not sure where she's living right now because she lived in New York. I think she's resident in Paris right now. She works mostly in Germany. And the person that recommended me to her is actually an American who works with a French orchestra. So it's quite complicated.
How does a Shostakovich fit into the grand scheme of that first concert? Apart from the fact that it's called a festive overture.
Well, something that we've talked in the past a little bit about, Anne, is I like to give especially a lot of thought to the very first sounds people hear in a symphony season. So the type of overture it might be, or whether it's a brass fanfare or something like a Marriage of Figaro overture. With the Shostakovich, it offers not just a festival sense, you know, obviously with the name Festive Overture, but it has this power and excitement and propulsive energy that seems to launch you forward into something. And it just seems to set a really great tone for what will become a powerhouse season. It's kind of like a great little welterweight piece. It's lean and compact, built with incredible economy and great power. And it's always one of these pieces that really excites an audience and gets people revved up for what's to come. It also, I think, offers something very different from the Tchaikovsky and the Stravinsky. And I think when you do an all-Russian program, one of the challenges is making sure that there's still enough diversity and contrast where you can have a feeling of freshness as you come from one piece to the next, as you experience one piece of repertoire juxtaposed against the previous or those that follow it. And the Shostakovich offers, from a historic standpoint, a very different thing, but also just a musical experience that's quite different.
So October the 19th and 20th is the second concert. And the Barber, you don't hear all that often, but it's getting more and more popular, that violin concerto, isn't it?
It's a favorite of all violinists. It's a favorite of people who follow violin soloists. And certainly, you know, it's one of these pieces that Drew Irvin and Kirill Lasker have come up to me and say, oh, we're doing the Barber next year. This is fantastic. Thank you so much for programming it. It excites the orchestra. It's gorgeous lyrical music with gossamer textures and incredibly subtle and interesting changes of orchestration that I think really is a nice pair with Rainbow Body, Christopher Theophanides' opening work on that program. And when you think about lyricism and great orchestration and perhaps lush and interesting harmonies, of an earlier example would not be better than Rachmaninoff. And we have his great Second Symphony to close that program. That is another work that for fans of Rachmaninoff, fans of classical music, you mark your calendar when you hear that the Second Symphony is going to be performed. One thing that's often mentioned to me by patrons when they thank me or want to comment about a repertoire selection is, can you whistle something when you leave the hall? And with Tchaikovsky or Rachmaninoff, you know the answer is always going to be yes to that. And in the Rachmaninoff Second Symphony, there are almost too many melodies to remember. Bob Moody is a very dynamic, creative, interesting, and well-regarded American conductor. I've gotten to know his work over the years, when he back with the Phoenix Symphony, and now as he conducts all over the world. And he has a few connections with people here in Arkansas, but this will be his Arkansas Symphony Orchestra debut. And in keeping with the theme with our guest artists, he is also very engaging from stage. He's great around the community, and he will be here truly working for the Arkansas Symphony, not just as a conductor, but doing some great things with what we do with our education and outreach and being visible around town.
When you get two guests like this, conductor and soloist, do you do a lot with the two as a couple?
Me personally?
Well, the symphony, when they program how these guests are introduced to the public outside of the concerts themselves.
That's actually a really interesting question. I think it will be similar to what we did last year when Guillermo was here, but with David Gerstein, our principal cellist, as soloist, in that you want to present the two of them together as this great pair and dynamic duo of guest artists, in this case, for next year. But for me, it was I knew both of these artists individually, and I thought they would make a great pair. In some respects, I'm a little bit envious that Bob gets to conduct Jennifer. The last time I worked with her was in the Tchaikovsky Concerto, and she just brought the house down. As I mentioned, those are the experiences where you just file that away in the back of your head and say, okay, that's a name, and that's a type of repertoire where you want to remember. And coming back to Arkansas, I think she is one of these people that I want our audiences, I want Arkansas to get a chance to hear her play. And the way it works out on this season is that Bob gets that concert, and I'm really happy for him. They're going to have a tremendous time, and I think our audiences are going to have an even better time.
Then you've got the pattern of the composer of the year very similar, that you introduce with a shorter piece or with a lighter piece. This year, the first time we hear a piece by him, it's the Rainbow Body.
It's a piece that, when it became clear that Christopher was going to be our composer of the year, that we absolutely had to fit onto the season. It's one of the most popular pieces in the entire repertoire right now, and I mean that including people like Beethoven and Tchaikovsky. It's I think, among the three or four most programmed works in the world right now of a living composer. It's an extraordinary, beautiful work, colorful, full of lots of interesting ideas that are developed in creative ways that seem to draw you onto the stage. There's an effervescent kind of infectious energy about this piece, but at the same time, there's depth and nuance that really belies his age as a young composer. I mean, he is somebody that has already achieved so much at his young age, not unlike some of our previous composers of the year, Jennifer Higdon and Michael Torkey. You asked how we ended up with Christopher this year, and me thinking off so far, we had a different composer of the year originally. And then when this incredible story of the Musician Commission happened, we thought, well, if we're going to have a major world premiere, we want to put the spotlight on that. He's going to be here for it, and it would make sense for him to be the composer of the year. And then the person that we'll have next year is very gracious to postpone by a year, and I can't wait to announce that in the future.
And then the third concert is the cello.
It's a program that kind of takes us through Viennese history from every angle, from the truly classic to all the way up through the 1970s, kind of rock what you'd find in downtown Vienna. I'm particularly excited about this program in that Beethoven and Blue Jeans has consistently been our highest selling program here, if you look at it on our season-to-season basis.
And who is Gulda?
Gulda is a really interesting composer who has a background as a pianist, as a jazz pianist, as plugged into popular culture, but also a tremendous mind who's respected for things like classical performance practice. Also a legendary sense of humor. The pieces that we have on this program really offer us a taste of Vienna as if you had lived it for generations there. Beethoven Fourth Symphony, one of the great, perfect examples of a classical symphony. Often overlooked because it just happened to get sandwiched between Eroica, the Third Symphony, maybe the most important piece in classical music history, and then the Beethoven Fifth Symphony, probably the most popular piece, Vienna, from the classical standpoint. And then coming a little bit more towards the romantic, operatic, downtown De Fledermaus Overture gets us into the upward feel, the sense of dancing in a three-time the waltz, a hesitation waltz, or any of these things that you might come to expect at a New Year's concert. So you see that side of Vienna. And then with the Gulda, he actually starts this cello concerto with something that sounds more like Haydn. And then it becomes more and more modern, and you end up with things that even sound like a rock group playing in a pub in downtown Vienna. How does he accomplish this without sounding kitsch or cliche or that it's playing to the wrong people? And he absolutely achieves it in spades. It's quite extraordinary. It was as if it was always there, as if it was a logical progression when we've heard the Beethoven or the Fledermaus, and here we are hearing something that seems to be a progression of music. And it fits together, and it's a reminder to me that an orchestra is not just something that plays a museum of works or sits in an ivory tower. It's simply an instrument that really has capabilities to play any repertoire.
The soloist for this.
She's beautiful. She's an extraordinary musician. She has a huge personality on stage, and she has a little bit eclectic musical tastes.
And so does she know this particular concerto quite well? Is that why you're bringing her in to play it?
Absolutely. It's a piece that she has championed around the world. Well, I'll tell you a story, actually. My mother, as you know, is also a musician, and she is very discerning in when she decides to recommend something to me. And she called me one day and said, I just heard this cello concerto with this Inbal Segev, and it was just dynamite. You should take a listen to this piece. So that happens with her and me maybe once every 2 years. And so I know that it really made an impact on her as a musician, but also the audiences just absolutely went through the roof at this piece. So I studied the piece a little bit. Our paths had crossed several times out in San Diego and other places. So I was familiar with her work, and she is a consummate artist of the highest caliber. So that there wasn't a question there. It was just, is this piece the right thing for the Arkansas Symphony? It's not something that you would normally find on the Masterworks series. But when I heard it, I thought, this is the absolute perfect concerto for Beethoven and Blue Jeans. Connecting different musical tastes, different musical genres, different musical styles and periods, all together with someone who's doing it with such conviction and passion that it's inexorable. You cannot help but enjoy yourself hearing it. I think it's going to be a highlight of the season.
We'll take a short break for an arts roundup before returning to the conversation with Philip Mann and the 2013-14 Masterworks season. Today sees the final performances of two productions, the award-winning musical Avenue Q at Arkansas Rep, showtimes 2 and 7 p.m., and King Lear, bringing down the curtain on the 2013 Arkansas Shakespeare Theater at 2 p.m. in UCA's Reynolds Performance Hall in Conway. Opera in the Ozarks, just outside Eureka Springs, presents the Pirates of Penzance this afternoon at 4 in Bentonville's Aaron Center. The Opera Festival continues with performances of Donizetti's Elixir of Love and Puccini's Madama Butterfly, alternating in repertory through July the 19th. All performances at Inspiration Point, 7:30 p.m., and Sunday, July 7th and 14th in the Aaron Center in Bentonville at 4 p.m. Galleries and museums are open around the state, so do check local listings and our online calendar at uarpublicradio.org. Now back to Philip Mann and the rest of the next Masterworks season. You're bringing Norman Krieger back for the second Brahms concerto. And what have you matched with him that would be something that will match his particular gifts?
Well, one of the great pleasures of being a conductor is having the opportunity to invite back a colleague, a fellow artist, and a friend who was so successful in his last visit here. And those are the most treasured relationships often, both between a public and a soloist, but also between an orchestra and a conductor and a soloist. And when Norman was here to play the first Brahms concerto last time, we had such an overwhelming response from the people who attended the Masterworks and then who came to that sold-out River Rhapsody program that was so wonderful. We need to have Norman back. What's the right way to do it? Norman is known for being a really wonderful Brahms player, so it didn't take too much thought to think, well, it worked the first time, let's do the second Brahms concerto. And the second Brahms concerto, it's a Mount Everest of a piece for a pianist. It's, some people call it the most difficult piano concerto to play. It actually is not difficult to listen to whatsoever. It's gorgeous, full of lyricism, but the extraordinary technical demands it puts on the pianist, but at the same time having to come across with lightness and clarity and effortlessness, it takes somebody of Norman's caliber to pull that off. I'm really, really excited to have Norman coming back to cultivate again this relationship with Brahms and our audiences and his wheelhouse repertoire. And to fit with it, one of the great combinations, if you look back in classical music history, are Brahms and Dvorak. It's something that we like to do in chamber music. It's something we like to do in big Masterworks programs. It's often something we like to do at festival programs. And this really is a festival program. I'm envisaging this as a Bohemian festival, which is combined with an Inc program, a River Rhapsody program, and Norman's Masterworks program. So on this program, you hear two major selections of Dvorak. We've got his Scherzo Capriccioso, which is the kind of piece that you would open or close a festival with, that is full of all kinds of fire and fun and dancing. And, it's just a really wonderful, exciting kind of piece. And then a selection from Opus 46 and 72 of his Slavonic Dances, which are the quintessential festival pieces. Those will all be put together then and connected with repertoire that we'll be hearing on the River Rhapsodies and in an Inc program, the Intimate Neighborhood Concert Series. And I think what we will have is an experience over about two weekends and the week between. It will be a unique experience for audiences that will hear familiar repertoire, new repertoire in really interesting venues, and something where we've experienced much more than just a selection of repertoire. Bohemian can mean many different things. It can mean simply a region that we would now think of as, Czech Republic and Prague and that area, or it can mean an artist aesthetic or style. It can also mean a lifestyle. And I think we're trying to embrace all three of these things in differing ways in that we present these different programs. And Norman, being such a consummate speaker from stage and great personality, I thought was also the perfect person to bring in for that festival. We needed somebody who would also embrace a very close relationship with the audience and was here to build relationships and to have some sense of humor and fun with a festival.
When you're planning your concerts and looking and talking to the soloists, do you warn them ahead of time what pattern of music you're planning and why?
Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. But the truth be told, I don't think I would ever have to, because the people that we're bringing in are the kind of people that we know are going to connect with audiences. There are many musicians around the world that may do a Beethoven concerto brilliantly, but are they the right person for our audiences here? Maybe yes, maybe no. And for me, a lot about it is, will the person connect with other people? And as an artist on stage, and any orchestral musician will tell you, if you look at the great artists of the world, Yo-Yo Ma, someone like that would be a great example. They're often also the most engaging, generous, warm personalities.
Now, we haven't said anything about the Verdi Requiem, but I was just thinking a little while ago while I was looking at it, the contrast between that and the Mozart that you did for the last Inc concert, when you and John were talking about the delight of hearing it with so few instruments other than those that were requested by the composer. where the Verdi was mentioned as being a monumental work with all the forces needed to paint those pictures. Similarity between the opening scenes of Otello and the portion in the Requiem, where virtually it's the same music, just in a different way.
Well, you're so insightful with your comments, because you pointed out two things just anecdotally right there that really went into my thinking here. And the first was the Mozart Requiem, in that something I wanted to contrast with it. You know, it has to be something that really it offers a different experience from the Mozart that we just did. Also, the operatic connection. You'll see a few threads of opera that run through this series. And it's part of that's a tip of the hat to my roots as a conductor, but also to a major part of the repertoire that isn't as well represented in Arkansas. And I think it's important that the Arkansas Symphony does everything it can to help with that. And then there's the third thing, which was, it's hard to deny the incredible success of that Beethoven 9 program we had 2 years ago. I'm still getting stopped in airports. And, you know, if I sit by somebody on the plane flying into Little Rock, people still mention that program. I ran into George Takei recently, and he said that was one of the most moving experiences he's ever had as an artist. And I wanted to...
But he contributed to it.
It was extraordinary, yes, what he contributed. And to try to recapture some of that collective excitement of a shared performance event that's bigger than everybody in attendance. The Verdi offers something very different from the Beethoven or the Mozart that we just mentioned. It offers a grand sense of drama in an operatic fashion. It seems to be the right piece to me when you're thinking of, that's the second to last program we'll have in the hall. It will be the second to last program where we'll be in a hall of that size. And if you're ever going to do the Verdi Requiem, that would be the time to do it.
Now, starting the season in September is going to make it a little more, feel a little bit more relaxed, because last year you started fairly late, and they seemed to come after each other so quickly, the first three concerts, to get them played before Christmas, as it were. So it's nice to have nearly a month between the first two concerts. And this is, I was looking at your soloist, you've got two pianists, one violinist, and one cellist. And then you've got a choral work, and then the orchestral work. And for once, the all orchestra is the very last concert, which often it's fairly early, or it opens the season.
Well, I thought it would be very appropriate, as we celebrate our exiting of the hall, that we put the spotlight on the people who really matter, and that's the musicians of the Arkansas Symphony. And to give them an orchestral showpiece like Mahler's Fifth Symphony, again, a piece like The Rite of Spring, is always an event anytime you see it on a program bill. It's you know, for those of us that grew up with symphonies, you know, aficionados or symphony files, whatever you want to call us, you see Mahler Fifth on the season and you mark that down in your calendar, you can't miss that program. And I thought, what would be more fitting than for the ASO to be able to take a bow on stage collectively using the full forces of the ASO? So all the brass players there, all the percussion, all the winds, and then expanded string sections to do a piece that will really showcase the virtuosity that's strongly in place within the ranks of the orchestra, but not just with the symphony in this case. We have this beautiful, quite moving story of an ASO musician commission of Christopher Theofanidis, our composer of the year, being commissioned to do a piece for the Arkansas Symphony Orchestra.
Have you met him? Do you know him quite well?
We've talked many times over the phone in preparations for this project, and he's just been really extraordinary to work with. He, in this case, you know, as the previous composers of the year, I had close relationships with. In this case, I have close relationships with many people he has close relationships with. And the music is a very small world, and we're connected in many, many ways. Mm. But it'll be the first time that we've actually been on stage together.
Who was it who suggested him for the orchestra work, the musician's choice?
Well, he was suggested by several people. He was one of my suggestions. He was several musicians' suggestion, and the musicians put together a committee. And it was this great process where they narrowed it down from dozens and dozens of names to a select few. And just to be included on that short list was quite an extraordinary thing. It was a who's who of composition in the world right now. And what put him over the top, I think, was his personality and the fact that he was really interested in engaging a community, doing education and outreach services. obviously his compositional style and the effectiveness of it with audiences and how much the musicians loved his music. I mean, that was the number one thing, absolutely. People listen to Rainbow Body, they listen to some of his other works, and that sold him right there. He's just a really creative, great composer. He also is just great to work with. And he was also very flexible with us and allowing us to know that we're going to have the world premiere of that piece here, and that we have, for a period of time, we get to perform that piece and potentially record it and things like that. And those are minutiae of a contract, but really play up that can amplify mm-hmm. the importance and impact of an event like a world premiere. And Theofanides is a composer that's known for a great deal of creativity and color and quite a panache with orchestration. And which made sense to ask him to do this, in the sense that he has been specifically instructed to give the musicians, all of them, each section, each soloist, something really interesting to do. So I'm really excited about the comparison and the experience of hearing that piece followed by Mahler's Fifth Symphony, which does all of those things as well, but in a different way. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's a great example of when we talk here about hearing a familiar piece next to something that's new and fresh, and it makes you hear the familiar piece with new ears.
Now, this concert, as with your other ones, is so full of variety. I ask myself, how do you start? Do you find in your mind the composer of the year first? You obviously put a lot of thought into the color and weight of the first concert. So that becomes your starting point. And then what follows? How do you match the tother and which? It must be a little bit like planning a jigsaw puzzle.
Well, that's an apt picture. It's not that I start with one piece of repertoire or a composer of the year or the season opener or the closer. Typically what I do is I have a plan over 5 or 10 years where I'd like to see the orchestra go. And very much I think of repertoire that takes us along those paths. And conversely, on the other side of that, I think about the orchestra and myself as its artistic leader being somewhat of a shepherd in the relationship with our audiences to this great art form. So it's a balancing of all of those things. And what ends up normally happening is I have a few pillars that kind of scaffold the season. And in this case, I think you'd probably point to the Rite of Spring, the commission put together with Mahler's Fifth Symphony, and then the Verdi Requiem would be the third in that group. Now, the other three programs, I think, are equally strong and offer tremendous things to new people to the symphony and people who have heard some of this repertoire many times. But I start with these few pillars that build the structure of a season, and then I just start tweaking, and it takes literally years. I mean, it looks like three pieces that, you know, you'll see three pieces that go together and they maybe taste right or they look right together on paper, but you can probably rest assured that many other pieces have gone in and out of those slots. And I talk to people in other orchestras. I talk to my colleagues here. It's an experimentation process. When you end up with what we have right now, which I'm very proud of and really, really excited about, you mentioned, you know, we have two pianists, a violinist, a cellist, a work featuring chorus and vocal soloists, and a work that features the orchestra as soloists with a world premiere. On six programs, to have that kind of contrast and diversity while maintaining such popular repertoire with sense of event like the Rite of Spring and the Verdi Requiem, I'm really proud of what we've been able to accomplish with that.
That was Philip Mann, Arkansas Symphony Music Director and Conductor, revealing some of his reasons for choosing what Arkansas audiences will hear when the Masterworks 2013-14 season opens September 21st and 22nd in Little Rock's Robinson Center Music Hall. For tickets and more information, call 501-666-1761 or visit online arkansasymphony.org. And that concludes this week's program. Please join us next weekend at the same time. I'm Ann Nicholson. Thank you for listening.
The Art Scene is a presentation of UALR's College of Arts, Humanities, and Social Sciences and UALR Public Radio.